WGPR Detroit HD2.
The views and opinions expressed on the following show are not necessarily the views and opinions of WHPS, its affiliates, management, or sponsors.
What's happening? Detroit and everyone listening all around the country. You are tuned into the real Black Coffee, No Sugar, No Cream. And I am truly happy to be with you this Monday evening. I'm not so excited about the topic. I'm tired of talking about wrongful convictions and all that that entails. However, my warrior sister and also the producer of this show and the founder of Survivors Speak, Trisha Duckworth, had her annual Wrongful Conviction Summit earlier in this month. October is also Wrongful Conviction Month. The summit was spectacular. It was heart-wrenching, heartfelt, and moving. We had Jay Love there from Turning a Moment into a Movement, Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, legislators, you name it, they were present. Because one thing I can tell you about Survivor Speaks and Trisha, it's not about the marching, it's about the marching orders. Again, it's not about the marching, it's about the marching orders. And when I tell you this sister lays out those marching orders, she is on city council meetings, showing up, talking to legislators, and giving her input in various ways in this fight, the fight against injustice in the United States that has gone on for far too long. I'm going to give you a few highlights from Survivor Speaks Wrongful Conviction Summit 2021. And we're going to start with a powerful woman from the New York area. Roll the clip for me, Marquise.
So let's get started. Why are we here? I need Shawana Vaughn, director of The Silent Cry, to the podium.
Hi, everybody. Trisha, I just want to tell you thank you so much. Thank you for standing in the gap. Thank you for being my sister from another mother. And thank you for accepting me as an ally.
Love you,
love you too. To every exoneree that is in this building, I salute you. I thank you. I thank God for you. I'm humbled by your tenacity and your endurance in a pit of hell. and that you have the tenacity to come out and run this race and fight for others. My name is Shawana Vaughn, and I'm the director of Silent Cry. I'm out of Harlem, New York, and I'm formerly W76337 by way of California Valley State Prison for Women. Why are we here? We are here because America is still grappling with slavery. They're still grappling with convict leasing and the Dow Jones. And because I live in New York, I'm very clear what the Dow Jones looks like, and I'm very clear about the bodies that went to the stock exchange. We no longer go to the stock exchange. We go to prison on a plantation. It's called New Slavery. The prison industry revenue has increased 4.4% to $9.3 billion in the last 5 years as of today. I need you to understand what you are worth. As African Americans and minorities, we are worth $9.3 billion in convict leasing for free labor. Demand is influenced by crime and incarceration rates, while the primary determined is by the prosperity for the United States. We are the blood diamond. I say that often because nobody understands the totality of what I'm saying. If you Google the blood diamond, if you understand what it is, if you understand what it means, they no longer have to go to Africa to get in the diamond mines. They just come to inner cities like Detroit. They just come to Harlem. They just go to places like Bakersfield. They go to places like Toledo, Ohio. We are everywhere.
Yes.
Scattered in this country. We are the blood diamond. And we are worth everything. And because people understand our value, sometimes even more than us, we are dangerous.
Yes.
We are scary. And it is perpetuated. America could not run if we were not wrongfully convicted. America could not survive or thrive if we were able to go about our daily lives and prosper. So they put us behind bars, even when we know we're innocent. We take plea deals because we get tired. They conjure up lies to suit them. But my problem is, I love Detroit, I love Michigan. But I need people to understand that the same person who put you captive can't be your hero.
Say that, sister.
The person that held you captive cannot be your hero. And unfortunately, she has a name. Kim Worthy, you cannot be the hero in the MSNBC and CNN. I'm sorry, you cannot be the hero when you were the person who helped capitalize and colonize my people. You cannot be the person to set us free. You are contradictory to the very thing that freedom means. You are an oppressor. And you helped the colonizer. And you cannot stand in both sides. You have to choose. We can no longer say it's okay to play knick-knack-patty-whack for these people over here, but we got 3,000 over here still in slavery and chains. Yes, I am looking at men in yellow shirts that cannot be afforded the money that Michigan said they deserve at $50,000 per year for wrongful incarceration. Do y'all understand that Michigan is asking for a federal bailout for exonerees? I need people to even understand what that looks like. Michigan has the second largest wrongful conviction rate in the country. And it has sustained it since the 70s. What does that look like, black people? What does the uprising have to look like for you to understand that they're coming for you? They are coming for your children's children. When do you band together and say no more? The wrongful convicted are due $50,000 per year. Michigan alone needs $7 million just to pay the wrongfully convicted people that are out right now. 156 individuals have been exonerated from death row since 1973. So that means for every 10 people that are executed, only one has been set free. I need somebody to understand what that looks like. I love data because without numbers, it's not real. See, the people in these yellow shirts are real. Butter is real. Ken is real. Kevin is real. Marvin is real. These are real human beings that were snatched from their homes, snatched from their mamas, snatched from their daddies, snatched from their wives, snatched from life. They were snatched into the abyss to make money for the Dow Jones. What does reparations look like? Because $50,000 a year is still not enough.
Say it.
It's not enough. And because I know some of these men, I know it's not enough. Listen, we're better together. Everybody in this room is better together. I don't care if my ally looks like a green leprechaun. I will work with you.
We're united. Woo!
Have a family conversation because everybody in here has one common denominator. Somebody's on a plantation somewhere in Michigan or in this country. I don't have time for big I, little you, big Indian, little chief. Who wants to be who? Listen, everybody's gonna be an Indian because we got people to get free.
Amen.
We got work to do all over this country. Everybody has a part to play in humanity. You have rent to pay to be on earth. There are people who are dependent on you not to be silent. There are people dependent on you to tell Kim Worthy no more. There are people dependent on you to go tell the federal prosecutor hell no.
Hell no.
There are people dependent on you. Their freedom is dependent on you. There are t-shirts of people all around this room. Everybody got somebody. Don't wait till it comes to your door to defend humanity, to defend what's right. This is absolutely unacceptable. So I say free Jason Bowers.
Yeah.
Free Danielle Woods.
Yes.
Free Mario Kavanaugh.
Oh yeah.
Everybody can't be their last mistake. So I don't just say I defend wrongfully incarcerated, I'll defend the murderer too. Because guess what? They're by the grace of God, they'll go out. Here goes my last one for you. I got a little brother sitting in Livingston County Jail in Howell, Michigan. And his name is Jewel Jones, the assemblyman from the 13th District. Now, I don't care how you feel. I don't care what you read. They lied on y'all, didn't they? They lied on Jesus too, right?
Yes.
So I don't want no naysayers telling me what the paper told them. Because the paper told you everything if you were a black person that was not right. I need you to pack the courtroom on October the 15th at 8:30 in the morning. And if you need a ride, I got a bus for you. I need y'all to do something that means something. We talking about wrongfully convicted? Let me tell you what. How about we stop convictions before they happen?
Yes, sister!
Say we have the opportunity to pack the court October 15th at 8:30 in Howell, Michigan. And I need you to do something. Stand for something or fall for everything. Because I'm going to tell you what. I called you from New York to come fight in Michigan at Gus Harrison Prison. But I don't know what I'm talking about because he was on the inside hearing me scream on the outside.
That's right.
And Joel came to stand with me. I didn't see half the people in this room, but I saw Trisha. Let me tell you what. Now he needs you to stand for him. Because there's no way in the world you're going to tell me that a 26-year-old young black man who has served his country and his state, you're going to let him fall? They're offering a young man 20 years for nothing that they can prove.
for imagined tea and pop smoking mirrors. And I don't even care if he's guilty. If he was white, we wouldn't be here. I tell the truth. So let's paint him white and pack the courthouse so he can go home. He got work to do too. I'll stand with you, but I can't stand with you by myself. You have to stand up too.
Shawana, Shawana, Shawana. That was a drop the mic moment. She brought the truth. And when she said, the person that holds you captive can't be your hero, that's true. Kim Worthy can't be your hero if her office is the one that held you captive. I am the first to say that I appreciate the conviction integrity units that are in place all around this country. One just got funded in Washtenaw County, etc. However, the integrity should be checked of the people who are in the prosecutor's office, the people who are in the police department, detectives, and judges. That old cliche, too little, too late, no, that doesn't work for this, because it's never too late if you're locked up doing time and you didn't do the crime. So it's never too late. But what I am saying is I agree 100% with Shawana. The person that held you captive can't be your hero. If Kim Worthy's office is the reason why you are in jail, prison, and people are parading her around like she's the greatest thing since sliced bread because they're out, you never should have been in there if that job was done correctly. So I say it's Kim Unworthy. Unworthy to be paraded around as if she's some great hope, some angelic being, or some angelic presence in the city of Detroit and Wayne County. I understand people will kiss her ring and lick her boot, you know, to do. I probably would too if I was locked up or trying to clear my name. I don't know, because I have not been in that position, and I'm not one to say if I were you, because I'm not. So I don't know. But one thing I do know is if you're the reason why I was put in jail, I doubt if I'll be riding that coattail when you get me out. You owe me that. You owe me the $50,000 per year that is promised. You heard Shawana quote the figure. They need $7 million just to pay the individuals who are out right now the $50,000 a year for every year that they were incarcerated. That check should be cut. That first $50,000, when they say they are going to send you home, when you walk out that door to freedom, that $50,000 check needs to be in your hand. But instead, you go home or wherever it is you're going. You don't have any resources. You don't have insurance. You don't have a bridge card. You don't have a place to stay. You don't have any of that. Oh, yeah, they told me that that's changing now. But it shouldn't have to be a shift in how it's done. All of that should have been a part of the process. It shouldn't be taking place now. Not to even mention the prison industrial complex, all of the money that you make off of these people while they're in prison. I get pissed off every time I buy license plates. I have 3 vehicles, and I spend close to $800 every year to renew tabs and put license plates on those vehicles, knowing full well that those license plates are produced by inmates for pennies on the dollar. So I say to you, we have a long way to go. And the wrongful conviction shift needs to take place in the prosecutor's office. And as Trishay Duckworth says best, you see a lot of people being released from being wrongfully incarcerated, but the majority of them are those who can place the blame on the police department. We don't see many people being released where the wrongful incarceration responsibility is on the prosecutor's office. So as I say, the person who held you captive cannot be your hero. One of the sickest and saddest cases I've heard of the wrongfully incarcerated is a story I'm going to share with you next, told by Mr. John Dewey. Roll the clip for me, Marquise.
Good afternoon. My name's Don Dewey. I'm a retired U.S. federal supervisor from the West Coast, the Department of Navy. I'm 68 and a few months year old. And when I retired, I decided I wanted to move someplace off the West Coast. I didn't want to live there anymore. So I decided to move to Michigan. I have in-laws living in up north, Rogers City in Presque County, Michigan. So I decided to take my remaining three kids, a set of triplets, and bring them with us and move to Rogers City. Well, lo and behold, for most of my life, I've always believed in our criminal justice system. Totally believed in it. I mean, we got all these laws, we got all these rules, we got all these organizations, we got all these people, and we have things called constitutional rights that protect us, supposedly protect us from evil people in our criminal justice system. But you know what? Those things don't work. The reason they don't work is because that system has been corrupted for many, many years now. At least 40 years, if not more. I can't say when I was growing up as a teenager, it was corrupt then, but I'll bet it was. Simply because it wasn't announced that things were going on in the criminal justice system. We always believed in our cops. We always believed in our lawyers. We believed in our judges. We believed in our prosecutors. Well, everybody in this room knows they're criminals too. They're after money, your money, my money, and anybody else's money. Well, back in 2002, my youngest son, one of the triplets, got into trouble. They claimed that he had sex with a young girl. He was 18, she was 14. Nobody believed him, but they did believe the girl. They sent my son out with the Michigan State Police and had him do a polygraph examination. He passed it. That doesn't mean anything. They were convinced that he had sex with this girl, and that's all there was to it. He was gonna be convicted on this. Well, he was in the Presque County Jail awaiting a trial. And magically, while he was on suicide watch, he was hung from the bars of the drunk tank using a sheet or a towel provided by the staff at the jail. He was laying there hanging from that bar for 13 to 21 minutes. They don't have a clue how long he was hanging. Well, they went in and they had to bring in a knife to cut him down, which they did. They revived him. He now suffers from severe emotional and mental trauma for lack of oxygen to his brain. He cannot do anything for himself. He cannot walk, he cannot stand, he cannot talk, he cannot feed himself, he can do nothing. He requires help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That was 20 years ago. He had a life expectancy of 5 years, and he's still alive because of our love and our support. We give that child every single day. I call him a child, but he's actually a man. He's 38 years old now. The thing of it is, they did not care. The people of that community, definitely law enforcement, nor of the legal system, cared what happened to my son. I cared though. I sued them. And you're probably thinking, oh, that was a smart idea, because I thought it was a smart idea at the time. The problem is, I have paid for that for the last 20 years. And the way I have paid for it is because they have come after my entire family for all kinds of petty little things. For example, my oldest son, Jeremiah, came from Washington State to Michigan to help us take care of his younger brother, Nathan, in 2004. When Jeremiah got here, he had a girlfriend who had two children from other men. But Jeremiah loved her children. So about 9 months to a year later, they followed Jeremiah to Michigan. Now, we sued the county and the state for Nathan's hanging. It was settled in July of 2005. It was advertised throughout Presque Isle County in the Alpena newspapers and the Presque Isle Advance newspaper in our local city. Shortly after that, 7 days later, all of a sudden, an anonymous person reports to the CPS in Presque Isle County that the youngest daughter of my son's girlfriend might possibly be being sexually molested by someone. Michigan State Police and CPS started investigations. I had no problem with this. They came to my house, they knocked on the door, I let them in, I invited them in, and they said, we're doing this investigation. I said, oh, okay, what do you need to know? Well, do you live here? I said, of course I live here, it's my house. And then I had my son Nathan in the wheelchair, he's sitting beside me. Says, does he live here? I said, of course he lives here. He's my son Nathan. They said, well, we got to interview you and we got to interview your son Nathan. I said, fine. Oh, by the way, Nathan does not communicate. He has no abilities to communicate in any way. So they said, well, first of all, are you around Brittany? I said, yeah, every single day. Said, well, it's being investigated that she was sexually molested by someone. I said, well, it wasn't by me, but go ahead, ask me anything you want. So we went through a bunch of statements, and then the CPS lady asked me a bunch of things. Then they started questioning my son, Nathan. And I said, what part don't you understand? Nathan cannot communicate. The CPS lady looks at me and says, oh, he's retarded. My son Nathan drops his head in shame. And I looked at her and I said, excuse me? She goes, he's retarded. I said, no, he's not. I said, why do you think he dropped his head in shame? He understands what you're saying, what I'm saying, what you're asking. He just can't talk to you. I said, since you don't seem to understand this, you can get the hell out of my house. I invited you in. Now I'm telling you to get out. So they started talking and whispering between themselves. I said, whoa, 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 let me explain something. This is my house. Get out now. And then the CPS lady says, well, we'll take Brittany with us. I called Brittany from upstairs, downstairs, and I said, here she is, take her, go. And state police trooper says, no, 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 hang on, Mr. Dewey. We're gonna discuss this outside. We'll come right back in. few minutes later, the state trooper comes back in and he goes, well, we're going to investigate this at a later time with Brittany and her mom. And so we're going to leave now, and we're going to leave Brittany here. I said, fine. Don't ever bring that lady back to my house again. Because if she comes with you, I will deny you access, including if you have a court order. I don't care. I don't want her in my house. Anyway, they do an investigation. They did one in 4 months apart. I can't remember when the first one was. But anyway, they did that first one, and they took basic information. They got her name, her age, her birthday. They've got other kids in the family, all this stuff, you know, for Michigan State Police. And of course, the CPS lady was there at the public library. Then a month later, they did another interview with her. Brittany told them that no one was inappropriately touching her. Brittany also had a rash at that time. It was not diaper rash because Brittany was not in diapers. It was a rash from her not wiping herself properly. So anyway, they did another interview a month later, going through the same old routine, and Brittany said no one was inappropriately touching her. They did the last one, and they said, again, Brittany said, no one was inappropriately touching her. So they decided to close the case for a lack of preponderance of evidence in this case. Am I running out of time? They also did a test on her for so-called herpes, and the rash she had was not herpes. So they completely closed off.
You heard the story of Mr. John Dewey. He wanted to be with us on today, but he goes to see his son most Mondays, and he visits with him from 2 p.m. in the afternoon until 9 p.m. I send my love and prayers to Mr. Dewey, and I admire his strength for standing in the gap of injustice for his son. As you can see, and as you can hear, there is a heart-wrenching impact that is felt by those who are left behind. Wrongful incarceration impacts the entire family, children, wives, and mothers. This next clip is of a mother, Miss Vernell Vaz, who fought hard for her son, who was wrongfully incarcerated. Marquise, roll a clip of Ms. Vaz, please.
First of all, I want to thank Trisha Duckworth, CEO, my founder of Survivor Speaks. I love her dearly. I want to thank Valerie Kelly Bonner for the real black coffee, no sugar and no cream. I love y'all for what you have brought here today. And Nathan Frazier also. We're here today, and I just want to say that there people have to understand, we are not ignorant in this room. You heard some real intelligent people in this room speak today. We know 80%, don't quote me on the numbers, we know 80% of people in prison belong in prison. We're not ignorant. And we're praying for them. But 20% of people...
This is nothing short of a complex, ongoing trauma. And it's a trauma...
First First of all, I want to thank Trishay Duckworth, CEO, my founder of Survivor's Chiefs. I love her dearly. I want to thank Valerie Kelly Bonner for the real black coffee, no sugar and no cream. I love y'all for what you have brought here today. And Nathan Frazier also. We're here today, and I just want to say that there people have to understand we are not ignorant in this room. You heard some real intelligent people in this room speak today. We know 80%, and don't quote me on the numbers, we know 80% of people in prison belong in prison. We're not ignorant. We're praying for them. But 20% of people.
All right. For some reason, we had a technical difficulty with Mrs. Vass. But what I will tell you is that she is passionate about this movement. She loves her son like most mothers do. And I don't know where her strength comes from to endure the fight. Her, Jay Love, they fought so hard and so long for their sons, Miss VC, and they continuously fight day after day after day, month after month, year after year. So again, your hero cannot be the person who held you captive. And on that day, when the wrongfully convicted are released, there should be that first $50,000 check cut for the person that's being released, as I previously said. But then all of the money that the families paid for J-Pay and all of these visits and commissary and all of that, you should give them parents, the loved ones, the caregivers, their money back too. That shouldn't have to come from the inmate who may or may not receive the $50,000. That's another check that should be automatically cut on the day of release. It seems that they act like it's nothing. Okay, you're dismissed. Good luck. No, it's not good luck. I still have a record. I'm still listed as a convicted felon. That too should be erased on the day that that individual walks out. How can you say that someone is free and you have all of these things dangling over their heads? It's no way in the world that you can consider that freedom. That's not freedom. You get out with no resources, no money, no help, no transportation, not anything that is required for you to live life outside of the prison walls as a respectable individual in any community. So I don't know why people are parading around and saying that, you know, my captive has let me free. Sounding like a slave, because that's what prison really is, slavery. The person who held you captive is not your hero if they let you out when you're wrongfully convicted. Not yesterday, not today or tomorrow, will that ever make sense to me. We've talked a lot about wrongful convictions and the summit. We've heard a lot about the problems. But we're going to talk about some solutions. Because again, This is not a moment. It's a movement. And it's not about marching. It's about the marching orders. So we're going to take a break, a musical break. And when we come back, we're going to hear from Dr. Zena Crenshaw Logo and her partner and a project that they're working on to get justice for those who have been subjected to injustice. We will be right back.
It's that time, y'all. Black coffee, no sugar, no cream. Yeah. It's straight talk with Valerie. Come on. Black coffee, no sugar, no cream. Yeah. It's straight talk with Valerie. Come on.
You are listening to The Real Black Coffee, No Sugar, No Cream. And I love that song because it says, we will not bow down to racism. We will not bow down to injustice. What you gonna do? I'm gonna stand. And next, you will hear from someone who's taking a stand. This sister is so powerful. She's an attorney. She's been working with the United Nations, the American United International, and the list goes on. You know that song, and the beat goes on? Well, the list goes on. This sister is powerful, and she's serious about her work and what she is doing to fight injustice in this country for the wrongfully incarcerated, disabled, and more. I want to introduce to you Dr. Zena Crenshaw Logo. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's so good to see you.
It is so good to have you. Dr. Crenshaw, I know that you're an attorney. Can you tell me and the audience how you ended up fighting for injustice in the way that you do? What moved you from the courtroom to justice in this form?
Well, you know, my practice as a trial attorney was very much like my advocacy as a social justice advocate, a non-lawyer social justice advocate. I represented the injured parties. I was practicing law in Indiana, which is a historically defense-oriented, business-oriented state. So carving out avenues or getting the courts to be willing to compensate victims who are injured by often large corporations was a fight in that environment. And after I had done it over about 13 years, and I started out really young, having a lot of responsibilities. I mean, I was, as a kid, you might as well say, I was up against some of the most powerful attorneys in the country, sometimes even in the world. And finally, the straw that broke the camel's back was a lawsuit I bought on behalf of a poor little girl who had nearly died as a result of ingesting a pharmaceutical, a brand name antibiotic. Mm-hmm. And not only did the judge rule against me, which was his prerogative, but they went after, they start sanctioning me and sanctioning the little girl. And at that point, it was enough is enough. And I talked with some of the best trial attorneys in the area. And we started noticing patterns that the way the courts were responding to minority lawyers. And so when you're resisting our litigation, we're in the living in the community with the people we represent, you're creating obstacles for them to be able to protect their rights, civil rights, constitutional rights, personal, you know, protecting them from personal injury. And so when I challenged the system, then, you know, it's rather unforgiving. We had a big press conference. We started talking about patterns of racial discrimination. And, you know, it was difficult to be effective. If I was representing you back then, I used to joke that I could be defending you in a jaywalking charge, and you get the death penalty.
Right.
So in other words, my clients got the backlash for me taking on the system. So my husband was gracious enough. He was a legal system reformer, and he told me, okay, you just need to just do this full time. So that was in 1998, and the rest has been history. And you called me attorney, but actually, years later, I guess, you know, since I wouldn't be quiet, the system started removing me first from the courts. They suspended me for 30 days from the courts in which I was often, what I would go in often enough. And my theory was that the judges didn't want to get caught up in the middle of it, because, you know, if they ruled against me, that was taboo. But if they ruled for me, that was taboo. And if they ruled against me, then they became part of the advocacy. So, you know, I got suspended. It was only supposedly for 30 days. But, you know, a lot of times that's just like a technical. You never come back. And so each year, as I continued to practice law, because I was still admitted to quite a few different bars of attorneys. But the more I persisted, I get a notice based on that I was suspended in another court. And this would be based on the same challenge years before, not anything interim. And what I did was challenge this pattern of discrimination that I perceived with a lot of support. I had the Black Bar Association supporting me. So at this point, I've been suspended for 30 days for years, because I never sought reinstatement. I just kept doing what I do as a human rights defender. So, you know, I don't know if technically they would consider me an attorney. I know that, you know, my ability to practice law before all the different courts in which I was admitted to practice have all been suspended.
Wow, you were too powerful for that status quo. Too powerful. And that's what they do. I see it happening a lot, where those who know the law know how to navigate the system, and know how to fight, they always try to find a way to ostracize or silence that voice.
Exactly, exactly. And that became part of my advocacy. In fact, I'm a national spokesperson on how the lawyer disciplinary process can be used to suppress First Amendment activity. So if you remove a lawyer from the practice of law, you suspend his or her ability to represent people that the system doesn't want represented. So it really goes a long way towards violating constitutional rights simply by removing attorneys from the bar. And now it's gotten to a point that it's very difficult, and Ms. Parker Brown is coming on. She can attest to this. I'm sure, can attest to as well. It's very difficult to get public interest attorneys to take controversial cases.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. It's sad. It's sickening. It's reprehensible. I just don't understand it. And I've seen so many judges not follow the canons, you know, when they're litigating and stuff like that. It's just, the system is broken. It's almost shattered and fragmented. It was never intended to work in our favor anyway.
Yeah.
However, Stevie Wonder can see that something's wrong.
Certainly, yes.
And we just don't have the power that we need to make a difference. Or do we? Because I know that there are a couple of things that you have been working on to build momentum. So what we're going to do is take a quick musical break, and we're going to come back. We're going to have Ms. Brown join us, and then we're going to have a conversation about some of the things that you guys are working on. You are listening to The Real Black Coffee, No Sugar, No Cream, Detroit, and we will be right back. Do Black Man, because it's long.
That I can as a strong black man, yeah. Here I stand as a strong black man, having done all I can to please my fellow man. I don't understand why that knife is in your hand. After doing all I can as a strong black man, I'm gonna take my stand as a black man. I will do the best that I can as a black man. I stand on my own as a black man. I'm gonna sing my song. Oh, this is me. So hear my plea. I'm a young black man, down on my knees. I say this world is wrong, and we don't have too long. I'm gonna take this stand as a strong black man. I feel the rain falling down on me. If you could see what's on my mind, oh, you will see. Everyone would be more kind. Keep on my goal, I won't let it go. As a gotta move. Gotta press my way through. Gotta press my way through. No, 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 no. Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, 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 yeah. Oh, I'm gonna do the best that I can as a strong black man.
So you are listening to The Real Black Coffee, No Sugar, No Cream, Detroit. And I am so happy and so proud to have Dr. Zena Crenshaw-Logal on the line with us. And she has Miss Brown on the line as well. So before the musical break, we talked about you fighting in multiple ways. You've had fights in the courtroom, and now you're fighting outside of the courtroom. So let's dig in and talk a little bit about AUI and LUI.
Thank you, thank you. Yes, so much. You know, as I told you, I got started in 1998, and I was advocating and challenging the lack of due process. We were focusing in on racial discrimination. Then our coalition expanded and it became interracial, and it really became about the court corruption and lack of equal protection. So at the beginning of this century, the internet allowed people to come online, and then people all across the country were talking about having similar experiences. And big states, little states, big communities, small communities. And I started tackling the issue as the co-founder of an organization. And our organization was focused in on analyzing the science of this corruption, this legal system corruption. How did it work? What was the nature of it? What challenges seemed to be effective? And we documented what we found, and we monitored what was happening across the country, and got feedback from you know, political scientists and historians. And that was our contribution to the advocacy. And what the difficulty that we had is that there were so many very popular community organizers and community mobilizers who spoke to the people. I joke that, you know, I don't speak human. I communicate in a way that resonates with the audiences that we need to persuade. Mm-hmm. So legislators, other lawyers. I have had literally unprecedented success in convincing these audiences that we weren't crazy when we were saying that there was a pattern to how these courts were working against whatever, you know, disfavored party, whatever, you know, whether it was in the criminal courts, whoever was the disfavored party, there was a pattern emerging as to how the system was, you know, finding a way to deny us a fair and impartial outcome. And what would happen is these popular advocates, you know, I guess they were jealous of their popularity in the considerable, you know, power that comes with being able to get a crowd of people to follow your lead. Mm-hmm. And then about 2 or 3 years ago, I came across Belinda Parker Brown. And, you know, I had heard about Louisiana United International and how this organization, a community organizer, a community mobilizer, under the leadership of Belinda Parker Brown, had managed to get powerful district attorneys sent to prison and powerful coroners and sheriffs indicted. And I immediately got in a plane and went to see Belinda Parker Brown and to be part of a rally in Louisiana United International. And this woman is, you know, just phenomenal. It's going to seem like a love manifest when we talk about each other, because it's just, I mean, she's just literally phenomenal, because she moves from one community. She relates to our kind of academic legalistic approach. She understands it, you know, with the precision of some of the most remarkable legal minds I've met. And then she translates it in a way that it that it resonates with the masses. So she very fluently speaks human. And it's just been, you know, we've been the double mint twins ever since and a force to be reckoned with. So at that, you know, I would like to introduce Ms. Belinda Parker Brown so she can tell you a bit about herself and Louisiana United International. And then we'll make our way to America United International.
Well, welcome, Ms. Belinda Parker Brown.
Wow. Well, thank you so very much for having me. I am very excited to be a part of this discussion on tonight. And so we're here with some very powerful people. It's so important that, you know, that the whole world know that this is a travesty that we're discussing here tonight. So yes, I am Belinda Parker Brown. You know, Dr. Zena gave that very interesting but powerful introduction, but I have never ever met anyone like her. Mm. Throughout the 40 years of my community organizing, my advocacy, that this woman is just, I mean, she was a breath of fresh air to this movement that really understands what this is really all about. So, you know, I really applaud her and thank her from the bottom of my heart for being a part of, you know, this very serious travesty that we're facing here when it comes to organized legal abuse of our corrupt criminal justice system. So with that said, I would like to say that Louisiana United International, we are a civil constitutional human rights organization that focus on these type of injustices. And we are in a state right now that we're saying that this is code blue. This is a push on the red button, that the people are suffering and families are being destroyed, you know, having all of their possessions taken away from them, their children, and being ordered to report to prison on some concocted, manufactured, fraudulent information when it's deliberately because of their, what we're calling it, is that the fix is in. When you got your lawyer, your judge, the prosecutor, the sheriff, the coroner, you know, the law enforcement, all in cahoots with each other to get a conviction. You know, and when there is a spin on political ties and connections, who you know, that you can be put in a trap and don't even realize that the fix is in against you. So, you know, I'm so excited that United, we shall stand, and divided we shall fall. This is one that we all can unite on. When we say that America United International is here as a force to be reckoned with, not to ask permission, but to demand that our voices must be heard. So thank you so much for having me. And we want to get right into this this discussion for tonight. So, because the whole world needs to know what this is really all about.
You better say, you know, it.
We're not going to hold back. You know, we're saying that this is our time to set the record straight once and for all as a people, that the courts belong to the people. And we're going to take our stand to make sure that that is what Exactly. I mean, that is exactly what we want.
Absolutely, because there's this culture that they don't even realize they work for us.
Right. Yes.
You work for me, Mr. Judge.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecutor. You mm-hmm. work for me. I'm standing in my own house. I'm not a guest here. This is my house. You're the guest. My taxpayer dollars is paying you to be in the seat that you're in. They break all rules. They stick together. And there are a lot of cover-ups. A lot Absolutely. Of cover-ups. And at the end of the day, when you combine that with the prison industrial complex and how much money they're making off of the prison system, I said in the first segment, I get an attitude every time I go and get my license plates here in the state of Michigan, because I know they're made by inmates. I have three vehicles and I play close to $800. And they're probably making those license plates for a dollar a day. Mm-hmm. And it's so many. If you've seen Ava DuVernay's documentary, 13th, she undercovers all of the entities that are profiting off of the prison industrial complex. If you have not seen it, it is a great documentary to check out. Ava DuVernay, 13th. And it talks about every entity that is involved. So let's dig Yes. a little bit deeper into your work. So you have put in prison or have had convicted a lot of people who were on the, supposed to be on the right side of the law, but in that position ended up on the wrong side of the law. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, that's what LUI means, is that we're here, and through our court watching and just, you know, organizing and mobilizing our community to stand up against this blatant public distrust, you know, we have, you know, just been able to successfully, you know, expose this type of malicious prosecution and these wrongdoings that come through our legal system. And that's the reason why we call it organized abuse of the legal system. And when they can use it to weaponize, you know, people, because of the fact that they can all get in cahoots with each other. So what we're saying, that, you know, we're at a point in time right now with people are just not going to tolerate this anymore, this type of treatment, you know. And when we begin to look at this thing a lot closer, and Dr. Zena Crenshaw became our assistant chief of operation, you know, I would consider her the expert of really understanding, you know, what this is, you know, how this whole thing can be conspired against you. Mm-hmm. And we begin to break it down, and we begin to dissect it, and we begin to, you know, talk about it and discuss it, that something has to be done. And then that's when we derive to the fact that, you know, where do you turn? Who do you talk to? You know, how can you have your voice heard when these type of atrocities are taking place and you know that the fix is in? And you, so I want to get right into this discussion, because we don't want to spend a lot of time on about what they're doing. Mm. We want to talk about what we have already done. And the United States of America have already admitted on January 15, 2021, you know, to October 2018 determination of the United Nations Human Rights Council that it fails to provide us, our citizens in this country, effective avenue to redress of this type of organized abuse in our legal system that have been facilitated with unchecked judicial misconduct against us. Okay? And that's when we got a judge that's drunk on power. We got a system that's already have connected all the dots on how they're going to get a conviction and make up their own rules in the middle of the game. So let's talk about that, Dr. Zena. Let's talk about AUI. Dr. Zena Crenshaw-Lobo is the chief administration of this campaign that we're calling for the solution. We're calling for the answer. We're saying that our voices must be heard. And the power is with the people. So, Dr. Zena, why don't you go right ahead and tell them why we know for a fact that it's time for the people to hear us. You know, because some people say, listen to us. No, we don't want them to listen. It's a difference between listening and hearing.
That's right.
We want the people to hear us, because when you listen, it can go in one ear and out the other ear. But when you hear us, that's an action word. It's time for action now. And that's the reason why we're so excited that you have us on your broadcast tonight. And we hope that this is going out to the whole world, that they need to know what this is all about, AUI, America United International. Thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome. Yes.
Thank you,
Dr. Crenshaw.
Yes, yes, Ms. Valerie, thank you. You know, first of all, I want to point out, because I know your listeners, the topic of conversation is wrongful conviction. And when we talk about wrongful conviction, at least it's been my experience, I never did really any criminal law practice, but criminal law has gotten to be so much about constitutional rights and human rights. You know, just the routine of, you know, call your attorney when you get arrested is the simple part, is being able to protect your fundamental rights. And so I feel comfortable addressing this topic. And so what I want to really communicate to your audience is that it may be the cop on the street, it may be the prosecutor, but we need to remember, in the criminal, when we talk about malfunctions of the criminal courts, it's not very much emphasis on the role of the judge, but it's the judiciary's responsibility to ensure that there's a fair and impartial administration of justice. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to keep everybody in check. So I encourage your listeners to start, you know, looking at where the buck is supposed to stop. Mm-hmm. and not so much looking at the judge as somehow duped or somehow brought into something just by the prosecutor or just by law enforcement, because it's that judge. They have all the power that they need to put a check on any type of misconduct, concealment of evidence, you know, perjury. And so our focus is on the court. So that's one thing that we want to talk about. Now, America United International. You know, I have looked at what has happened in these courts from a little different perspective, because I did this work as a trial attorney. I was up against the defense attorneys who were doing whatever they had to do to win for their corporate clients. And so I know the psychological warfare that they engage in. And one thing that people need to realize is that our 10, 20, 30 years of fighting for justice and not prevailing, the silver lining of that is that we have established a track record in which we can say that this is ineffective, That has a definition in the international human rights law. And when a system is ineffective, it's not adequately protecting your rights. It's not adequately protecting you from wrongful convictions. That doesn't mean that no one ever wins, but it takes too long, it costs too much, and the wins are too seldom.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one loss after another, people get discouraged, but it's the necessary record for us to be able to say, you know, this is not working. This is just lip service. This is just a shell game. Ms. Melinda said this is like chasing a rabbit. So where are we? We're in a country that the United Nations has concluded, as Ms. Melinda indicated, on October 10, 2018, that when your allegation is basically that the fix is in, that there has been a deliberate violation of your rights, and here's the kicker, the judge has facilitated it. The presiding judge has helped make that possible. The United Nations, after looking at evidence that we presented to them, determined that you don't have nothing coming, not in the United States of America. They are not going to give you effective avenues of redress. If I say that Ms. Valerie owes me money, or Ms. Melinda, you know, needs to be, you know, I'm suing her for something, then I might get effective. I might get a day in court. I might prevail. But if I say that the presiding judge teamed up with my adversaries and denied me due process, deliberately violated my rights, then the United Nations have said, get ready for a runaround. Get ready for, you know, just to get the hole from a donut. And then lo and behold, in January of this year, the Trump administration, on behalf of the entire country, basically admitted to the United Nations Human Rights Committee, this is a different body, that you're absolutely right. So if you have an order to go to prison, or if you have an order to surrender your children to Child Protective Services, or you have an order that won't let you bring your mother home, your elderly ailing mother, and raise her yourself because she made the mistake of getting old and vulnerable with a lot of money. And so she's got a guardian who is milking her estate, and it started off as $2 million, which she worked hard to leave for her children, and now they're spending it. When you are in that predicament, you know, there's no relief that you're going to be able to find in our system. And you are ordered, when you have a court order that says you are the problem and no, we're not going to give you any relief, you just have to report to prison, you just have to turn over your children. What do you do? Are we obliged, you know, if we have a court order that we have compelling evidence is the result of a fix, is a result of a deliberate conspiracy to violate our rights? I want to ask you, Ms. Valerie, do you think that we have an obligation to just simply, it's a court order, I got all this evidence, I got these boxes of evidence that this was a fix, the judge knew, my prosecutor, the judge knew, my, you know, the lead attorney against me, but I've lost, I've exhausted my appeals, the Supreme Court won't look at my case, and so I've been ordered on November 10th to surrender myself to prison, leave my minor children, I'm telling you about a case I know about, and the fact that I have this evidence that the United Nations says that this country is not going to give me a fair shot in proving that all of this was deliberate. And the Trump administration acknowledged on behalf of our country, not his administration, on behalf of the country that, yeah, you're right. If you got that kind of evidence, well, we got other things to do, and you're not going to get a fair shot. Wow. So what you have to do is just, you know, take it on the chin and go ahead and leave your children and go to prison. Do you think that's what we're obliged to do, Ms. Valerie, under the law? Or your choice is, you know, disappear and become a fugitive or become some kind of criminal. I want to ask you almost rhetorically, do you really think that that's the only options that we have in this country?
It shouldn't be. But unfortunately, in a lot of cases, it is.
Okay.
And okay. I just think if we get rid of qualified immunity, that would be helpful.
Yeah, you get, if you know, immunities, I have a different, you know, position on a lot of immunities than a lot of people do, because to me, it's not so much about having the immunities, it's abuse of the immunities. But, you know, it's still a judge making the decision as to whether that immunity is going to apply or not,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, so that becomes the obstacle. And if your allegation is that the judge deliberately, you know, denied you relief, then where are you? Okay. And a lot of people talk about we need to eliminate judicial immunity, but that just gives you an opportunity to sue the judge. They're not supposed to be immune from investigation, from discipline, from impeachment, from criminal prosecution. But anyway, let's talk about what options you have when you have this order that says, okay, Dr. Zena, tomorrow at high noon, surrender yourself to town halls, to the town square, and we got a firing squad waiting for you, and you got an order, court order, to show up. So is anybody going to tell me that in this country, my choice is to just, oh, well, I got this court order, or somehow get into some type of fugitive stand or contempt of court? I want to draw everybody to attention if they can see it. It's not totally visible on this screen, and I know I'm not sure if all your audience can actually see us.
No, unfortunately, they won't be able to. Well, I can, though, so please proceed.
Well, let me tell them about a document that was called the Declaration of Independence.
Mm.
And my colleague is a historian, and the Declaration of Independence was a bunch of guys who were wealthy, you know, and white, and they were tired of being oppressed by the King of Britain. And they wrote the Declaration of Independence, and they said that in the circumstances that they have gone back and back to the government, they have presented their cries for relief, they've asked for reform, they've asked for justice, over and over again, and like us, they it has been denied with no justification whatsoever. And these gentlemen came to the conclusion, under those circumstances, you can resort to what's called natural law. They talked about divine right. Back then, you could talk about divine right. So there is such a thing as our inherent right to defend ourselves. Have we all heard about that? There is such a thing as natural law. Law, that's real law. Our inalienable rights, our privileges and immunities of American citizenship. You do not have to just go along with unwarranted intrusions on your life, liberty, and property. Mm-hmm. Under those circumstances, what gets vested in the collective people, we the people, the right to change the terms of government. We do not have to. This is a government that serves at the pleasure of the governed. They serve by our consent. We do not have to consent to that. And America United International is the 2021 reclaiming of the Declaration of Independence. And we're saying when a country has been declared by the United Nations and it has even acknowledged that when the fix is in, there is no real relief available to us, but these same corrupted courts are producing orders that impede on our life, liberty, and property. As I say, turn over your children, surrender to prison, lose your law license, lose your medical license. Under those circumstances, and this is the beauty of the documentation, all those losses, all those people that told me, oh, Ms. Crenshaw, don't look like your letters are working. Well, guess what? If we had not been writing those letters, if we had not been making those demands, we would not have, just like they have in the Declaration of Independence, a long history of those reasonable demands being denied. Mm-hmm. And so we could not stand as we're doing today and saying that we are not going to, we're going to change the terms of these judgments. We're not going to be just turning over our children. Now, this is not just mutiny, and this is not violence, because the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, they said under those circumstances, you can overthrow the government. We're not talking about overthrowing the government. We're talking about changing the terms. And the United States is supposed to, under one of its human rights treaties, when you have these allegations, this country pledges that they will give you effective avenues of redress, not just the runaround. When someone is a fundamental obligation to this country to protect us from abuses of power, mm-hmm. from people in government. That's a fundamental obligation. And they have pledged that they will provide that protection. And as far as I'm concerned, that is more important, that the government protect us from people who misuse government power, than it to me, that's more important than feeding us. That's more important than making sure we have clothing. Because, you know, if we're fed just to be slaves, of course, that's just my perspective. And so what we have done, American United International, and we have gone to the U.S. Supreme Court, and we said they won't give us that protection. We come here, and we are going to we're going to tell you how to go about protecting us. This is what you're going to do. We're not asking. We went to the U.S. Supreme Court and say, okay, we got this record. We've been writing these presidents. We wrote President Biden. You know, people steadily having to give their children up, go to prison. He hasn't got back in touch with us. He didn't even acknowledge the letter. So I tell you what, this is what we're going to do. We, the people, mm-hmm. hereby determine that as the high court of this nation, this is what you're going to do. You're going to put a pause on these court orders. We are not going to have to be criminals. We are not going to have to surrender ourselves to prison. We are not going to have to, in the case that I filed, the people that have been coming after me have been trying to have me, they lose inheritance. They want, I have valuable property I've inherited. They want that sold. The Supreme Court, we're saying, you're going to put a stop to all of that until the president or Congress create this FEMA where we can bring our evidence of this judicial corruption. And guess what? Simultaneously, and, you know, it's not a big deal that I signed it, but Ms. Belinda Parker Brown, she is a well-regarded political figure in the state of Louisiana. But guess what we signed? We signed a request for investigation of no other than the sitting president, Joseph Biden. And we asked that the International Criminal Court investigate him because, you know, why he's sitting back letting all this happen? Why he just bystanding to that? You know, it's a crime against humanity for what these people are doing. It's a crime against humanity that they are locking up our loved ones, you know, railroading people, you know, keeping our parents. Yeah, and you know, we haven't even heard from him. So what we have asked the prosecutor to do, can you look into that? You know, can you find out, does he mean that? Because, you know, that's a crime also. Mm-hmm. That's a crime in and of itself.
Well, you know,
so
what?
That's what we've done.
Let's remember the role of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris with the crime bill that was released a few years back. That bill within itself is the reason why a lot of our brothers and sisters are locked up mm-hmm. from minimal amounts of marijuana.
Yes, he wrote that.
He mm-hmm. wrote that bill. Mm-hmm. So he's so intertwined in this mess. That's why he's sitting back. And I don't mean to be evil, but what really, 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 really got under my skin, two Asian people get killed and you have this whole Asian crime bill that you signed, Mr. Biden, and put in place, you know, this Asian hate.
Off the press.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. When mm-hmm. all of this other stuff is going on, and he needs to remember, Black people and brown people are how you got there. Most of the Democrats.
Can I say this, Ms. Ballard? Then I'm going to be quiet because you and Ms. Belinda are going to take this away. I just want to say it's not political. It's about power. The court system, the legal system, you know, there's a professor out of Ohio, and he said, you all need to stop looking at this as a place where you go to resolve legal dispute. This is a power distributing center. When they go to this court, they decide who's going to own the prisons and how much money they're going to make and who's going to fill the prison.
Absolutely. You better say it.
This is about power. What multi-billion dollar corporation is going to have to compensate you because now you paraplegic because of you taking their drugs or using their products, and when they not going to have to compensate you and you just out of luck. This is about power distribution, and I don't care who the president is, they are not at liberty, if they are interested in staying in office, to disrupt this power distribution. This is social engineering. You know, they'll get you out of there in a heartbeat. So that's not an excuse for it. But what I'm telling you is that it. I don't care who is in that seat. They even if they sympathize with us, they are up against forces so powerful and so dark that unless we rise up and demand that a change be made, their hands are tied. We actually give the president cover by rising up with the American United International and saying, we not going to take it anymore. And in that way, he don't have to go to his wealthy and his powerful benefactors and say, I want to do this. He can say, Ms. Belinda won't drop the subject. Ms. Valerie won't drop the subject. So I'm going to have to make some changes because we do have to pretend that we are a free country. And, you know, everybody thinks we're a democracy and we actually have a rule of law. So you actually are doing him a favor by rising up and demanding that this stop. Okay, that's all I need to say.
Absolutely. And Ms. Valerie, if you don't mind, let me come in for a minute because, you know, this really gets my blood to boiling. You know, it's nothing like, you know, being, you know, blatantly disregarded. You know, when you done everything right. Okay. You have done everything right. Then you don't get no response. You don't get no response whatsoever when you know that they are obliged, the president is obliged to do his job. When we're saying, you know, down here in Louisiana, we just experienced a major, major hurricane that devastated the people here, you know. And then there was, it came out that the governor had to declare an emergency evacuation. He had to call that so that people would not die in the way of the hurricane. You know, so, you know, when you understand these words, you know, I want to make it crystal clear to our listeners that when I say that we're declaring a state of emergency in regards to this organized legal abuse that people are being tortured by, okay? It's tyranny. It's destroying families. Mm-hmm. You know, people are suffering. People are committing suicide. You know, they're getting all of their possessions taken away from them because the judge is in cahoots with the insurance company, okay? Greed. And when I say drunk on power, and greed and money, you know, so it don't matter who you are. And this is what we realize that certain communities have suffered under this atrocity, you know, worse than others. But what we're saying that this have gotten to the point where it have, you know, it's a bomb ticket. You know, it's explosive and it can happen to anyone when the system is weaponized against you. Okay. And they're coming after you, you know, for you know, political, you know, connections and, you know, who's going to, you know, just say, for instance, I want to share this. You know, we got a situation where a young man, okay, was in a tragic accident. He was hurt bad. And his lawyer did not disclose to him that the lawyer was in cahoots with the insurance company that he was suing. Listen, people. You know, so it came down to that the insurance company made a deal with the lawyer. You know, oh, get him to settle for this. You know, you can get him to settle for this. You know, when this man was looking at maybe, you know, anywhere to a $250,000 to a $500,000, you know, dollar lawsuit, the lawyer wanted him to only take $30,000.
Wow. Now, you know, it happens all the time.
So that's the reason why we're saying we want to make this crystal clear to our audience, Miss Valerie, that this is a code blue. This is time out. We can't wait for this. And we're saying that our president cannot allow the citizens of the United States to suffer any longer up under this tyranny. It's treason against your own citizens.
I agree. As always, we never have enough time to really, really, really go a little bit deeper because our time is running out. But before we go, I would definitely like for you to share if individuals can get involved in your movement, because I see you started out as Louisiana United International, and then you became America United International. So is there ways that people can get involved with your cause that live in other states, like Detroit and Michigan and other areas across this country?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let me make it clear again that, you know, Louisiana United International, we are here. We are hosting this campaign for America United International. And we don't anticipate for this to go on long. But however long it has to go on, everybody needs to come a part of this. Okay. Everyone needs to become a part of this powerful movement of the people that's taking a stand against these atrocities that have been happening in our legal system. When it comes to organized legal abuse, there is a conspiracy, there's something wrong, something seriously wrong, and we want our voices heard, we want some big eyes, and that's the reason why we said we're calling for a FEMA. We're a FEMA. Here in Louisiana, most people that's familiar with that, it's a federal emergency management agency that say, look here, we got to assess, we got to look at the damages, we got to, you know, we got to be able to help, you know, bring a relief to the people that have been damaged, that are being destroyed, that have been hurt, okay? So instead of just standing by looking and gazing, waiting to see what's going to happen, that, you know, come on and be a part of America United International and say, we want a FEMA. We need a federal emergency agency that can come in. We need a place. We need somewhere where our voices can be heard. And Dr. Z, would you go right ahead and let them know? Because, see, my blood get to boiling when we get to talking about, you know, the tragedy, you know, the danger that we're in right now, and that we got people standing by, you know, oh, what we going, you know, whining and crying about what they doing. Did they doing this? Oh, they can't do that. That ain't right. You know, file this, file that, you know, appeal this, appeal that, go to the Supreme Court. And you can't keep going to the same place looking for help when they don't intend to help you in the first place, because the fox is guarding the hen house. You said it earlier, Valerie, they covering up for each other.
I agree. I agree. And I think we would have to revisit this too, because we can talk so much more about what's going on and how to organize better. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's part of our issue.
Yes.
We're so fragmented when it comes to organizing and things of that nature.
But, you know, that's part of the design. It's not all our responsibility. You know, they devastate you and then tell you you need to do a better job at, you know, coming together. So www.americaunitedinternational.net, just the common spelling of those words, all lowercase. You can find our website, and that'll give you all the information for contacting us. www.americaunitedinternational.net, or you can call me directly at area code 985-244-6465. So area code 985-244-6465. You know, but we want you to go online. We have a small staff, so dealing with a lot of phone calls becomes a bit of a challenge. So if you go online, we've got portals on there for you to contact us, to subscribe to our website, and that way we all can get in the loop, and we are organizing and mobilizing, and Ms. Belinda is one of the best.
Thank you so much. Our time is up. It's been a wonderful show. I beg your pardon for the difficulties that we had, but I think we should revisit this topic as so much more. You know, we just scratched the surface, and I know that. So I definitely would like to have both of you back in the future, and let's talk about this subject a little bit more. We got to get our people fired up. You know, absolutely. We have to stop accepting crumbs from the table. And it looks like you sisters are almost...
I know we are off the air, but I really want people to go to that website immediately. We're in a window right now where they can become ambassadors and pledge to be an ambassador on a first, second, or third tier. You know, it's time for us to unite and become a force to be reckoned with. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. You hear that, people. Go to the website. Was it www.americaunitedinternational.org?
.net.
www.americaunitedinternational.net. And join this movement. Because again, it's not about the marching. It's about the marching orders.
Woo! I like that.
So it's time. Let's go. Thank you, Dr. Zena Crenshaw-Logo. And also, man, Miss Brown, you brought the fire. You don't mess around. You do not mess around. I feel so honored. I want to thank Elizabeth Benedetto for connecting us. I feel a sisterhood has formed. If it's anything I can do to assist, you are welcome back here anytime. Just give me a phone call.
But thank you so much for having us. It's been a pleasure. We're looking forward to us working together.
Yes, mm-hmm. I am honored. You have been listening to another episode of The Real Black Coffee, No Sugar, No Cream, where I never try to spill the tea or make you feel dazed like you drank a shot of cheap liquor. I just want you to see things from a different perspective, mine. And we're out of here. I will see you next week. Enjoy the balance of your week. So long. Thank you.
From the moment I met you, something whispered in my ear that you were the one. And I had won by merely becoming a contender for a prize that the world would surely envy. You were more than just beautiful and friendly. Cause see, I instantly wanted you to see the end with me. We were made for an eternity. You reminded me of my mortality, cause at that very second I thought that I would die if you weren't the one God had chosen to love me.
A gift from telling my heart desires, a love who means so fierce with fire. My real veins supply my needs, yet I was lost but you found me. Perfect is the heart for peace, all my love I guarantee. You and I makes unity. Perfect peace is what you bring to me.
Now hold up, I don't give my heart away with ease, but when you walk by I feel a breeze that makes me want to take a chance and open my mind to our romance. Now I know you're not out here playing games. I thought you were tripping when you wrote Imani then your last name. And I admit that, babe, I feel the same. Come through, boo, let's do this thing, yeah.
Downfalls make it worth it, put our pride aside. Against the odds, we survive, leave a past behind. Saw you walking with some friends, took a bold approach. In the dungeon and kissed your hand, I be doing the most. Confidence, they're not aggressive. First sight of your smile, in the presence of a blessing. No love in the wild, so exchange of our numbers. FaceTime for hours, a few laughs, and now I wonder. One look in your eyes might divide or bring us closer to trust, closer to love. Entangled, thinking, marry my crush. No pressure until you press it, now I'm seeing you blush. No rush, no extra flexing, I'm just feeling you such. All these fights from my exes brought our pleasure from pain. Haven't loved in a while, so I'm ready for change. A heart made whole in this world so cold. Black love everlasting, be our story that's told.
This story one day will be
Come on, black coffee, no sugar, no cream. Yeah, it's straight talk with